Welcome to All Sides with Anna Staver. Each year, Preservation Ohio searches for historic buildings at risk of demolition. And the most vulnerable among them, like Columbus's landmark Lazarus department store, go on a list. Ohio's most endangered historic sites. The group hopes drawing attention to places we've neglected or abandoned will keep them from being torn down. But what's the value in preserving old buildings? And why do certain ones make the list over others? Isn't every old home worth saving? We're talking about landmarks, historic preservation, and the why behind the effort to keep these tangible connections to our past alive. We begin this hour with Thomas Palmer from the Executive Director of Preservation Ohio. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi, Anna. It's great to be here.
So let's start with Lazarus Department Store down here in downtown Columbus. Why is it, what about the store put it on your list?
Well, first of all, I want to mention that it's not the Lazarus store that people remember from their youth. It is a previous incarnation of that store. But it nevertheless was a location for Lazarus in an important part of Columbus's retail history. And as such, it's an important piece of the story of Columbus, one that deserves to be celebrated. And heaven knows that the legacy of Lazarus is a strong one all over Ohio, actually. And that is actually one of two buildings there on High Street, and one of two different properties that were put on the list this year in Columbus.
So what is the criteria for a site to make the list? Because there are lots of abandoned buildings all across the state. So what designates one as worthy of saving, let's say, over another?
Great question, Anna. Let me mention, first of all, that when we develop this list each year, and we've been doing it since 1993, we invite nominations from local organizations, local governments, local property owners, neighborhood groups, a variety of people, and they can submit nominations to our board. They submit documentation in terms of the risk and the historic integrity of the building, why it's important locally, or even in some cases statewide or nationally. And our board then takes a look at all of those and decides which ones are the most important to put on the list. There's two reasons they're put on the list. One is because they have a valuable history that is important, as I shared, for local or regional purposes. And the other reason is that these are risks that other buildings face. And this particular structure can serve as a model for others. You know, they can, people can look at the list and say, oh, I have a similar building in my community. I might give a second thought about the future of that building. So it has a powerful impact every year, and we've had some real good success with it.
Yeah, one of the other Columbus buildings on the list is Farm Crest Bakeries, and it has these super unique curvatures to the building. It was considered the world's most modern bakery at the time. And so it's an example of a very specific kind of architecture that doesn't really exist anymore in the state, right? So it's sort of, that's the model for what this looked like at the time.
Absolutely. There are other Art Moderne, which is typically the way you would characterize what you were sharing. There are other buildings like that, commercial buildings, even residences across the state. And it might give someone in the community the reason to look at a building differently and say, oh, that really does add to the context, to the vitality of my community, to the quality of life in the place that I live in. And Ohio's full of these things everywhere you look.
Yeah, the list really runs the gambit this year, from the department store building here in Columbus to a one-room schoolhouse. So they're all not large industrial sites.
That's absolutely true. And not only that, Anna, some years, things other than buildings are included. We have included a stretch of a state highway. We have included statuary. There is a wide variety of things that are considered. Each of these sites, though, has something in common. They provide a quality of life benefit for Ohioans in a local area. And the idea is that context that they provide can turn economic development in the future into community development. It's economic development that enhances quality of life.
And one of the things that Preservation Ohio has helped keep around is the Westcott House. Can you tell us a little bit about that project? Because I was sort of surprised that this particular house was ever in danger of being torn down.
Well, let me give you a really quick story on that. The Westcott House in Springfield that you're referring to, Anna, is the only Prey-style commission of Frank Lloyd Wright, which is one of America's most celebrated architects.
Yeah.
His only Prey-style commission in Ohio. We became aware of the plight of the Westcott House. It had been subdivided into apartments. We took a tour of it. I literally saw water running down a utility shaft in the Westcott House. So we put it on the list that year, and the owner of the apartment who had resisted attempts by the Frank Lloyd Wright Conservancy in Chicago to sell the house used our listing as a reason to finally make the decision to sell the house to people who would preserve it. Multi-millions of dollars later, it's a showpiece of Ohio history and really important for the city of Springfield.
Yeah, it's by appointment only, though, I would say. So you definitely need to make an appointment if you want to go see it.
Okay.
But it is one of those things where it was one of a kind here in Ohio, and it was going to be lost to history.
Yes, that's exactly right. Although I will share also, Anna, that sometimes it's not just the one-offs, not the ones that are just one of a kind. Sometimes the most modest structures have a unique place in the story of a community, their economic, social, cultural life, and they're also worthy of preservation often.
Like that one-room schoolhouse.
In Akron, you're absolutely correct. But look at that schoolhouse, Anna, and then compare that to the Hill Memorial on the campus of Ohio Northern University in Ada, which actually figures as one of their logos for the university. That building is endangered this year.
That's kind of crazy. I mean, it's the literal logo.
It's one of those things you wouldn't believe it unless you read it. You know, if you read it, you wouldn't believe it, but then you live it and you see, oh, this is something that can actually happen.
We also want to hear from you this hour. Is there a building here in Central Ohio that you think deserves preservation, or one that disappeared that maybe you were sad to see go? Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email your thoughts to allsides@wosu.org. You know, I want to shift gears and talk a little bit about the value in preserving historic landmarks, because, you know, the old adage is when you buy a 100-year-old building, you buy 100 years worth of problems. So these buildings can be incredibly expensive to restore. So what do we get from having these buildings in our community?
Well, in the first place, Anna, I'll tell you, just because it's expensive to maintain these buildings doesn't make them go away. Ohio is full of downtowns and central business districts with buildings that are 100 to 150 years old. These are challenges that every city faces. And the state of Ohio has really stepped up to the plate, provided one of the best tax credits for renovation of historic buildings in the entire country. And we should be very proud as Ohioans of the track record of the Ohio General Assembly in making that kind of incentive possible. So that's what I would say.
And I guess I would also say maybe that regret goes only one way. So you can't restore it once you've demolished it.
That's the old adage on our end, is that once it's demolished, history is gone forever. It's not something that can be replicated. You can't go out and build. You can build a replica of something, but you cannot imbue it with the feelings, the knowledge that comes from looking at those places and experiencing them firsthand. And we think that's an incredibly important part of living here in Ohio.
And the saying that they just don't build them like that anymore is also true, because, you know, pre-World War II buildings tend to have rare hardwoods like heart pine or things from old growth forests that no longer exist, or unique details that you're not going to find today. So sometimes the buildings themselves are filled with all this quirky and unique and one of a kind architecture.
Even though that's true, Anna, I have watched that kind of quirky, one-of-a-kind architecture face a bulldozer. I was standing in Tiffin when Ohio lost its last Victorian County Courthouse, and I was watching the backhoe attack beautiful wainscoting and decorative plaster work in that building. And it was so sad to watch, but I had to be there to experience it, because that had also been on our most endangered list at the time.
Yeah, you've been doing this list for the last 3 decades. Can I ask what have been some of the most notable sites that you've seen saved? I mean, besides the Frank Lloyd Wright Prairie House.
Yeah, I can give you 2 quick examples, one of which is not too far from where you might be, and that's the Athenaeum in downtown Columbus, which was the former Masonic Temple. Our organization had a huge role in seeing that property preserved back in the day. It's on 4th Street, not far from the State House. The other one is one of my favorite stories. A high school senior was driving past a derelict farmhouse many days on her way to school. And she saw the most endangered list nomination call. She nominated it to the most endangered list. It was put on there. The intention that it gathered brought it to the attention of someone who put money into it that got an Ohio Historic Preservation tax credit. And it's now a very successful bed and breakfast in the middle of nowhere. No offense to Adams County, but a very, very rural area and a little town called Tranquility. And there is this beautiful John Wilson house, which is a bed and breakfast preserved for at least the next couple of generations, all because of this high school senior in the most endangered list.
Oh, wow. That's incredible. I wonder what she thinks about it now.
She is one of our best supporters. And I guarantee you, if you go to our Facebook page, you will see her name as one of the likes every time.
You know, with Farmcrest Bakeries, you put it on the list here in Columbus, but the property sold in March, and the local developer told Axios Columbus that they've already begun working on the site and demolition is underway. So do you guys ever think about whether it's too late by the time you put it on and still put it on anyway?
Yes. And in fact, with all due candor, the nomination process takes 4 or 5 weeks. Mm. A lot can happen in 4 or 5 weeks. And in that particular case, we were aware it was coming down. But nevertheless, it was the importance of the building and the importance of the example it set that we felt merited it included on the list anyway.
Now, the company does say they plan to build an affordable housing complex, which, I mean, Columbus definitely needs more affordable housing. But
yeah.
And they want to erect a historical marker. But somehow a marker of the thing that used to be there feels different than the actual building.
That's back when I was talking about building a replica. A marker is really a little different than that. It's almost an insult to the history of the building. So anyway, it's a sad thing about the Farmcrest Bakeries. Columbus Landmarks Foundation, our great partner in Columbus, was also concerned about that building. But it just goes to show you that what we do is to do the best job we can, bring attention to bear, bring resources to bear when we have a chance to do that, and then hope for the best.
And don't forget, we also want to hear from you this hour. Is there a building in your neighborhood that you think deserves to be on this list? You can give us a call at 614-292-8513. So, unfortunately, though, not every building has historic significance, or maybe it's just in such a state of disrepair that it's beyond saving. So how do you prioritize? Basically, how do you decide who gets on the list?
Well, the nice part about that, Anna, is I get to do a little bit of a cop-out here, in that it's my board that decides, not me, although I obviously have an opinion.
It's like a group decision.
And like I said, they look at what is important to the community, the level of history that's represented in the building, and then they look at the threat. Is this a threat that is similar to others? We once had a statewide listing for Ohio's historic school buildings, because that was something that was happening everywhere at the time.
Final question. How do we nominate a building in our neighborhood?
Every April, we send out a call for nominations. You can find Preservation Ohio online. It just at Preserve Ohio or Preservation Ohio on all the major social media networks. And you can find us at preserveohio.com. But we issue a call for nominations. It's very public. We send it out to media. And then we take the time to fully analyze each and every single nomination that we receive.
That was Thomas Palmer, Executive Director of Preservation Ohio. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
It's great, Anna, to be involved. Thank you.
Coming up, we're drilling down on Columbus and the historic landmarks here in our community, as well as who maintains them. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. Simon Lazarus opened his first one-room men's clothing store in downtown Columbus in 1851. And its flagship department store still sits here on High Street. The store used to be known for its big window displays at Christmas, but now it's at risk of being torn down. Property records show a developer plans to tear it down and build new apartments and retail spaces. CEO of Columbus Landmarks, Rebecca Kemper, joins us now to talk about the Lazarus and other historic buildings here in Central Ohio. Welcome back to All Sides.
Thank you for having us.
So, you know, the Lazarus building seems like a really excellent example of it used to be this big retail store, this landmark here in downtown, but it closed in 2004. And it's a question of, like, where do we go from here?
Yes. And so the historic Lazarus block, which is right next to the Ohio National Bank, are two sites. And it's important to note that that site has been redeveloped over the years as well, too. So what we're looking at is not necessarily the original building, but it still provides a continuous urban fabric. Its history is quite meaningful to our residents. And that's why it made last year's most endangered sites list for us as well.
So how important is it to try and keep it here? Because it sounds like it may already be a done deal.
Well, you know, I think when we go through the process of accepting most endangered sites, we listen to the community. We get hundreds and hundreds of calls in and physical nominations through our form intake process. And our board has a specific committee that also goes through and looks at the historic significance alongside those really moments of the community discussing those heartfelt relationship to that building. And so that all kind of goes into those decisions. So you'll see what that future holds. We are very pleased to have the Ohio National Bank still with us and a lot of dedication on that site as well to continue. But we still remain concerned there.
So let's talk about some of the landmarks that you guys have helped to preserve. So I'm thinking of like the historic trolley barn at East Market, the Southwind Motel. What are some places around town that we should know about?
Oh, those are great. I think other ones, too, would be the historic Pythian Temple on Mount Vernon. That was a place we were able to be with Ohio History Connection for Juneteenth this past weekend. Maroon Arts Group is using that as their headquarters and are taking a really laborious process to bring that back online for the community. Parkwood Headquarters, which was traditionally the Ohio Baptist Headquarters, and there's an additional new apartment build there, is another wonderful one where we see the mixture of below market rate housing with historic preservation. And so those are two that we're really excited to see kind of back online in the different iterations for the community.
You know, so I live up in Delaware, and a local Facebook group was recently lamenting the loss of these funky old gas stations at the corner of Lake Street and Central Avenue. Yeah. They're these white octagon-shaped buildings that were apparently prefabricated by Union Metal in Canton.
between 1925 and 1935. So they were going to demolish them, but then an out-of-state collector bought them and moved them. So they weren't torn down, but it was so interesting to see the comment section full of people wishing they had been turned into something else, like drive-through coffee or like a little like take-and-go snack shop. Like they were just like, oh, I always remember those being right there on the corner, the weird little octagon filling station, and I'd love to have seen it become something else.
Yeah, that's a great kind of case study on what we call sort of the continuum of preservation, right? So we're on WSU, so the equivalent would be saying classical music, which can really mean a variety of different types of music that could be, and we sort of use a blanket term here in the United States, but it's different genres and iterations. When we say preservation, and for Columbus Landmarks, we support a whole sort of continuum that can mean partially saving a building by moving it in this case, but our ideal is that those landmarks stay in the community, and that we accept either adaptive reuse, so we give that structure new life in a contemporary economy and a contemporary market, all the way to if it's its history and provenance really determines that, full restoration.
Yeah, and I was curious how the city, the county, and the state kind of factor into this, because renovating an old building is expensive.
Yes. Well, and that's something, too, where we have sort of a national policy shift. It was the case not that long ago where we could have historic tax credits and affordable housing credits on the same site. That is no longer the case from a federal level. And so we're actually seeing projects like Starling Middle School, which was a former most endangered site for us that was converted into affordable housing. That is not really available to developers in the same way. And so that's really changed the policy landscape of how our state and local governments can support. It's created an opportunity, really. Other states have sort of stepped into this vacuum to allow for state historic credits to be used with alongside affordable housing so that communities don't have to make the decision between affordability and losing their landmarks.
Sort of what happened to Farm Crest Bakery.
Correct. That's exactly what the case.
So I have to ask a more esoteric question. So what is the value, in your opinion, to a community in keeping these old buildings and going through the effort?
You know, I think it's saying that there is a history for these neighborhoods that should be recognized and for other community generations to be able to enjoy and understand. It's a visible marker for those histories. If we take Farm Crest Bakeries for as an example, that building was also a national leader in terms of a workforce development for the African-American community here in Central Ohio, and it was replicated elsewhere. So in a time where diversity, equity, and inclusion, workforce development training sessions are under threat, that was a landmark in this community for that kind of typology way back when. So it's more than just the fact that it did have a rare architecture form, which we also celebrate. It also was the meaning behind that building.
There was a story that's going to be lost.
Absolutely.
I want to take a call from Julie in Westerville. Welcome to All Sides, Julie.
Hi.
Hi.
Okay. I'm driving home just now, and I listen to your program frequently. And I noticed that you were talking about structures that are fragile, that we're losing, and we need to keep our history going. And I am a member of the Columbus Historical Society, the Franklin Historical Society, and the Ohio Historical Society, and I'm a storyteller, so I love all this stuff. And I'd like to get the word out about a place called the Deerdoof House, Deerdoof. Got it?
Yeah.
There was a man, David Deerdoof, came in to this area around 1807. Now, the Sullivan, as many know from our history, the first European settlement was in 1797. But anyway, David built this house. And it's an interesting story, but the thing is now we're in great danger of losing it. There was a man called Walt Reiner that saw the structure. And it, by the way, it was not only a private family home, it was the first post office here.
Oh, okay.
And it's one of the few rare original structures that we have from the original settlement. You have the Harrison House, and you have, it's under renovation, the old an old fire station, which will be the center for the Columbus Historical Society. But anyway, a man named Walt Reiner got together with a man called David Maurice Bailey. And David started taking pictures of the renovation. It was sort of an individual project to keep it going, and took films of their work. And it's gone on for a long time. Unfortunately, the man who supported it and worked with David, Walt Reiner, has died. And I'm not sure what the family's going to do with the property. And we're trying to mount an effort with David's filmmaking to get a film together to tell the story of the Dierdorf House and get it out to people and keep it from being destroyed.
Julie, that was such an interesting story. Thank you for sharing. So, Rebecca, do you know anything about the Dierdorf House?
Well, she did a great job of summarizing that history. And a big thank you to Columbus Historical Society for all the really rich archives. That's something when we were putting our most endangered sites together as well, we're a good partnership on. And one of our most endangered sites this year is also the Sugar Shack, of which the Columbus Historical Society had a number of those documents in terms of that as a nightclub venue. But no, it's many of these homes and things that we realize are under risk, particularly with the market climate and families needing to sometimes make those harder decisions. So thank you for that is a wonderful summary of that history. So
yeah, it's the first post office in Columbus. That's kind of wild. Mm-hmm. And one of the first original homes. Like, instinctively, you sort of think if anything's going to qualify, it's going to be something like that. But it's not always the case.
Well, and I think it depends on any one year for us. We listen to the community of what is call-ins and what is submitted and going forward with those.
I think a lot of times the question is, can it be repurposed? Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. You see like old factory buildings sometimes becoming loft-style spaces or apartments or commercial spaces. It's about, can we take this old thing and maybe use it in some different way?
Absolutely. And I think we have some real great case studies right here in Ohio within Cincinnati and Cleveland of these, especially these warehouse buildings being adaptively reused and having quite a bit of market demand. Offices want that open floor plan design that were inherent in these warehouses. It's something why we're raising the alarm for the Spaghetti Warehouse on Broad Street. We have a wonderful arts development that's happening, arts and cultural development, that harkens back to a warehouse design. And yet right there, we have an 1880s authentic warehouse that just with a little bit of work could be that sort of office space of high demand.
I do think sometimes there's even like a value or a selling point. Like, there is a certain cachet to be like, I work in a 200-year-old warehouse.
Absolutely. I think there's a character to these buildings. There's a continuity to your neighborhood. There's a direct connection. It allows for different industries to remain relevant to those neighborhoods. And I think that it's hard to underplay that value.
We also want to hear from you this hour. Is there a building like the Dierdorf House that you think needs to be preserved here in Central Ohio? Give us a call at 614-292-8513 or email allsides@wosu.org. Rebecca, I have a question for you about buildings that have been renovated over the decades. So in certain ways, they can look like all different styles jumbled together. Where do you come down on keeping that as sort of a record of how we've changed or trying to get it back to where it was?
Yes, and there's some sometimes regulations around that. So if we're touching a building that's on the National Register of Historic Places or in a local register, oftentimes there will be design standards for new build touching the historic building that's clear demarcation. There's other times where those listings might not exist, but we would still advocate for providing an individual going through those spaces to have some awareness of what might be new build and what's historical. But also what's important is the continuity of that experience, right? And so you can have a very sensitive design that merges the contemporary with the old that can serve communities better. And so it really is site context. And that's something where we really look to our experts within our architecture community here in Columbus to kind of help guide some of our own feedback as well.
Can I ask whether you guys ever work at Columbus Landmarks with local homeowners who maybe want that historical marker on their own home?
That's a great question. And the answer is yes. We work with homeowners on a variety of fronts. One is our home preservation program. We are lucky enough to have Susan Keeney, a registered architect, that will go and visit historic homes and provide assistance with scope of work. We also oftentimes will partner with other organizations or undertake our own grants to do the formative preservation research needed to have that historic marker placed in front of either a commercial or a home.
And when it comes to historic, how old does something have to be? Because I'm seeing toys from my childhood now sold as vintage. And I got to say that messes with me in a way that I'm not ready for yet. But how do we define historic?
I'm the same way, too. There's a series of vintage toys that I am now providing my children from the 80s. And it makes we all feel a little vintage ourselves. So from a age standpoint, really anything 50 years or older has a case potentially to be made to be historic. Now, there are different classifications for historical significance. This can be architectural style, its rarity. It can also be those individuals that inhabited that place or built the structure. It can also be movements in history and the different cultures that have gone into inhabiting a place. And so when we say whether it's historic or not, there's a whole constellation of aspects that come into play. But it's much younger than most people think. It's just 50 years. And what we're seeing, too, is that like other movements to preserve history, we have a need to really preserve our modern architecture and other sort of newer styles and forms that isn't always on everybody's radar within our preservation community.
Even though like mid-century modern furniture is all the rage right now.
Absolutely. And it presents a whole other perspective and view of how to inhabit space and to live within a more contemporary time, too. It's part of the reason we listed Ohio Hospital's East Tower, but Leon Ransom Jr., a 1971 build, modern design as well, because this is such an iconic building of this style.
I want to take a call from Scott in Springfield, Ohio. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi. I was going to ask what the outlook would be for something like the Crowe Collier building in Springfield. Crowe Collier published Collier's Magazine, Look Magazine, Life Magazine. All those were printed in Springfield. The original building was added on too many times. It's become very run down. And I don't know if that really qualifies as a historic building. I suspect there's a lot of buildings like that throughout Central Ohio. So I'm just wondering what the outlook for buildings like that in general are, or specifically about Crowe Collier.
Thanks, Scott. Yeah, it feels like, I mean, since all those national magazines that used to be such a huge part of our lives were printed there, there is some, at least, sense of history in place.
Absolutely. And I think one of the challenges can be when you have a building that's been added onto many, many times, that those additions have not necessarily been to those standards. It can be a little bit harder to list that building from an architectural preservation standpoint. But there are still many opportunities to save that history and to save those buildings. One is within a publication house like that is connecting with your local library system and archiving. That's something we really cherish, our partnership with Columbus Metropolitan Libraries, their digitization of history, using software that also allows these materials to continually be updated to the next versions and not lose resolution. Those are all the things that can help sort of build the case and save that history that surrounds a building like that. But there can be additional challenges, not only from a building being vacant, but if many, many different additions have been made without those architectural standards, it can be much harder to list.
And as somebody who spent most of her career in print newspapers, printing presses for magazines, for newspapers, those are specialized buildings with very large, complex equipment. They are incredible. If you've never seen a printing press run, it is kind of amazing to see it be printed. But at the same time, I know from personal experience that selling a building like that is extremely complicated.
It can be. And so there's, you know, there the market for that, who can come in and use that space. And yes, those that machinery is just elegant. I love going through those spaces. So but it can be more of a challenge.
For sure. That was Rebecca Kemper, the CEO of Columbus Landmarks. Thank you so much for your time this morning.
Thank you.
Coming up, we're talking with a local architect about the challenges of preserving, adapting, and repurposing our old buildings. That's when All Sides continues on 89.7 NPR News.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Anna Staver. We're talking this hour about preserving historic landmarks across Ohio. Because while the buildings can have character and draw tourists to our communities, they also present a number of challenges. Safety codes, building standards, and all of the things that taking the old and making it safe for the current day. Joining us now is Teresa Durst, president of Hardlines Design Company. Welcome to All Sides.
Thank you.
So building and safety codes have changed over the decades. So what kind of challenge does this present when we're preserving and adapting older buildings?
Well, a lot of times we find in older buildings that, especially if they were built by lower income communities, that there's not a whole lot of wasted space. Like there's no extra space to hide ductwork. So I'm working on a project right now where I'm just challenged with the engineers, like, how big, how small can we make the ducts? Where can we squeeze them? Where can we put the outside rooftop units so that they're hidden? The other challenge every time is, like, people want to open their building up to the public for assembly, and that requires a lot of structural reinforcement. And some of the buildings we get have log floor joists.
Oh, my goodness. Yeah. And then you also think about, like, ADA compliance restrictions and, you know, sometimes those, like, staircases, those twists and turns, they're not set up for today.
I have to tell clients that a ramp for every inch off the ground, it's like 12 inches of ramp. So if you need to go up 6 inches, you have a 6-foot long ramp.
You know, in 2022, you had an interview with the Columbus Dispatch where you said, if we end up demolishing everything, we'll have nothing left of our past. And I think that's kind of the theme of this hour. But what, in your opinion, is the criteria for saving buildings? Because we probably can't save it all.
No, we can't. I guess it's sort of like trying to get a variety. I know I've talked to some people who strictly believe, let's just spend our money on the big monuments, the really important stuff that everybody recognizes. But equally important are the smaller, the nondescript buildings that supported those big buildings. Like we can't just save one part of our history. So we need to save a representative sample. So I think a lot of what our work is, like, we tend to focus on those smaller background buildings that are just as important in supporting the larger monuments.
And sometimes the little buildings have really big stories behind them.
They do. They have that background, the other side of the story that you didn't know about.
I want to take a call from James in Clintonville. Welcome to All Sides, James.
Hi, thanks for the call. I came here about 50 years ago for graduate school. I worked in this building at OSU that was eventually imploded because it was not, I don't know what they could have done with that building. But then I worked at City Hall for about a quarter century, which is a real interesting building because it was, you know, it's like a block O and was built with different wings at different times, and I saw a lot of change. As a matter of fact, we had a TV studio in what used to be a courtroom. So anyway, I used to go from there daily, just a block over to the downtown YMCA, which is on the National Historic Register. And they're about to close the gym in that building when the pandemic hit, and then they used the building for extra housing. I don't know if they're doing that now, but I wonder if that building is going to be saved, because it had a lot of real serious plumbing and mechanical problems.
Yeah, you know, that is a question. When it's on the historic registry, is it an automatic save, Teresa?
It depends on the funding source. If the owner of the building wants to use tax credits or grants from the federal government or state government, then they have to follow what Rebecca previously said, standards. If you're just using private money, there's nothing preventing you from demolishing the building and just making a parking lot.
Even if it's on a registry?
Even if it's on the register, as long as you use private money only.
I want to talk a little bit about sustainability because, you know, preserving an older building is more environmentally friendly than knocking it down and building something new. A lot of our landfills are actually full of construction material from buildings that we've torn down.
Yes, and we also talk about embodied energy, like all the energy it took to build that original building. If you just knock it down, that's all been wasted. So yes, we do like to just repurpose the building. And I was in another conference with a developer who likes using old buildings because in his mind, they have the best real estate. They're in the best locations. To build new now, you have to go further and further out to get the piece of land you want. But if you repurpose an old building, it's already right there in the heart of town or right in the middle of the neighborhood. It's got the best piece of land.
And buildings, especially those pre-World War II, often have materials that you just won't build with today, like heart pine or old growth forest or exotic woods or materials.
Or just the craftsmanship to get that level of carving and details. Yeah, to get that today would cost more than you'd be willing to pay if you could find someone who could actually still do it.
Yeah, I think about Notre Dame Cathedral and like the thousands of man hours and millions of dollars that they're investing in reconstructing it.
Yes, the reconstruction.
That's sort of an extreme example of preservation.
We're finding that even today, just trying to bid our small historic building renovations, there's not a lot of firms out there who have the people. I think a lot of people just retired during the pandemic. They never came back. And there's just a lack of skilled craftsmen. So our historic projects are bidding a lot higher than they did before the pandemic.
Yeah, one of the most fascinating stories that I heard about the construction of Notre Dame, or the reconstruction, was that they were pulling woodworkers, like master carvers from all over the world, who were coming to France to work on this project. And it was an interview with an American guy who was going there for 6 months to do some of the hand carving. And I was like, oh my goodness.
Well, that explains why we're missing some people.
They're all in France. No. You know, Are there architectural styles that are easier to adapt to modern living than others, or do they all present different challenges?
They all present different challenges. I guess it's more like a building type. Like a house is a little more difficult because the rooms tend to be smaller. The structure tends to be weaker because it was just designed for a house. So try to adapt that to a assembly use for group meetings is more difficult than, say, adapting a warehouse that may actually already have really strong structural members to support storage.
I want to take a call from Susan all the way in Omaha, Nebraska. Welcome to All Sides.
Hi. I'm sorry to say, I think Omaha is pretty bad. They can't tear them down fast enough. But my question or comment or both is like, how can we persuade people to take the long view? And one example is, I think I forget the name of the city in Germany, where they were too poor to build new. So they just kept their old buildings. And now they have a booming tourist business. And nobody cares about going to the neighboring towns that have new buildings. Or another neighborhood in Chicago, where a family of siblings, most of them moved out of the neighborhood in the 60s when everyone was moving to the suburbs. And one of the family members couldn't afford to, so they just stayed there. And now their home is appreciated in value because people are coming back to the city. So what about the long-term, you know, like, I hate to say investment, but, you know, long-term possible value for these buildings?
Well, here in Columbus, we just point to German Village as an example.
That is a tourist destination.
It's a tourist destination. Real estate prices have gone through the roof, but when it was built, it was all common worker housing.
That's true. And now you cannot be a common worker and get a house in German Village. I think a lot of them are selling for high six, low sevens.
Yes, yes.
So it's funny how it went from being like housing for the everyday man to like so exclusive just over the course of 200 years.
And a lot of people will credit this because it is a historic district that we had rules in place that prevented people from just demolishing and building new buildings. They had to preserve what they had.
Yeah. In learning about how Columbus grew and expanded, one of the things I've looked at is how they tore down a lot of buildings and streets to build the highways. And it can be so sad to like be like, oh, that's what that used to look like before they put the highway in.
Yes. And one example, the Kelton House was saved from that because Grace Kelton, the owner at the time, had a lot of pull with the city. And apparently she went down and complained about the highway being too close to the house. And I guess that's why 71 does the jog around her house that it does.
Oh, my goodness. I didn't know that. That's fascinating. You know, of all the projects that you've worked on, do you have a favorite or a couple of favorites that really stick out to you over the last couple of years? Or is that like choosing a favorite child?
Well, I think of the memorable ones, like the Lincoln Theater in downtown Columbus, because it was on the verge of falling down. Like the roof had major holes in it.
And it's such an iconic building.
And it was iconic just standing there, because from the research we did, we knew it had been built by a Black developer who funded it, and it was a Black contractor that built it. And the one thing we couldn't figure out is who the architect was, but we knew it was a Black architect. Some people thought he was in Dayton, but nobody could find any information. I personally think it may have been the guy who had the Black architect who had an office right down the street. I mean, why wouldn't it be him? He built the building like catty corner from the Lincoln Theater, but there's just no proof, no materials.
So the mystery persists.
The mystery persists. We just know that it was a completely Black developed building, and therefore that just made it really unique.
Yeah, let alone just like the look of it in downtown. It'd be hard to imagine that area without it.
And inside, it's an Egyptian revival theater, which is not really common. There's not a whole lot left in the country.
Oh, yeah. I've been inside. It's wild. You walk in and I'm like, oh, my goodness. This is totally different from like other old theaters of a similar era.
Yeah, it was the colors that surprised me. The first day the painter started painting it, I walked in and went, wow. Because until then, all we had seen were the faded versions of the ceiling that were left on the floor.
You know, I think sometimes, you know, historic preservation also increases community cohesion, right? Pride in the culture and the community and the place. You know, what do old buildings tell you when you see them, like, just sort of dotted throughout communities?
Well, if it's unfortunately the one that's still in good shape, it's like, okay, somebody really cares about that building. And when we were working in the Lincoln Theater, we had a lot of neighbors come and just asked us, when are you going to get done? It's like, I can't get people to come move into my building until your building is done. It's like they saw it as a catalyst. Like, get one done, then the next person will work on theirs, and so on down until the block is done.
Kind of like the reverse of the broken window theory.
Yes, that if one person fixes it up, then the next person will say, well, I can do that too.
Yeah, and it's hard, though, because we were talking earlier about Farm Crest Bakery that's being torn down, because they're tearing down and building affordable housing, which is something that this community needs.
Yes.
We need more affordable housing, but it is that balance between, like, there's this beautiful building with this, like, curved architecture that you don't see a lot of anymore, but we also have a need for lower-income housing in Central Ohio.
Right, and unfortunately, most of that tends to be built by private developers who have to make their money back. So
yeah,
if the cost to adapt an old building, especially one with interesting features, just puts them over.
You could probably do luxury condos in a building like
market
that.
Market value, probably you could. But yeah, if they don't have that tax credit, especially the PAIR tax credit that we used to have, it makes it impossible for them to put a feasible project together.
Yeah, we were talking about that earlier. I didn't realize that PAIR went away.
I think back in the 80s, even the tax credit was double what it is now. So,
oh my goodness.
Like, movie stars were buying old buildings and putting money in to rehab them. And then I guess the federal government decided it was too much, so they got it down to where it is now. And yes, I can see slowly, you know, one by one, these all go away, and then we'll have to build it all back up again.
You know, you talk a lot about some of the big projects here, like the theater. Mm-hmm. What are some small projects that you've worked on that we, like, might not know? It's very, like, if you know that building has been preserved.
I'm working right now on a church that's in Lawrence County, like, kind of in the middle of nowhere. It's in South Point, and it's apparently the as far as we can tell, the oldest black church in Ohio. First one built west of the Appalachians.
Oh, my goodness.
Just because of its location in the
southern... And there it is in Lawrence, Ohio.
In Lawrence County, Ohio, the southernmost point, South Point. And it was because it was directly across the Ohio River from West Virginia, which was part of Virginia before the Civil War. And it was the easiest way for enslaved people to get out of Virginia and cross into Ohio was right there at South Point.
Oh, my goodness. That is... so crazy, and I never would have known, I guess, if they hadn't dug it up and you decided to work on fixing it.
It's until I went to look at it that I even heard about the history. Yeah, it's not something people talk about all the time.
That's amazing. And that was Rebecca Kemper. I am so sorry. That is not Rebecca Kemper. That is Teresa Durst, president of Hardlines Design Company. Thank you so much for your time today, Teresa.
Thank you.
And that'll do it for this hour of All Sides on 89.7 NPR News.